I might have to run out and like break down a pallet in the middle of this, but I'll be as quick as I can.
Fingies crossed.
Think about needs of notice for human beings. This is issue 336 of the Insert Credit Audio Magazine, where we ask three video game experts our most thought-provoking questions with the precision of a horrible buzzer. I'm Krista Lee, and the class I would be best equipped to substitute teach is Geomancer. This week, we'll be diving into the dirt bag, answering questions submitted to us at patreon.com/insertcredit. For just a few dollars a month, you can join our patrons to ask us your own questions, get bonus monthly episodes, and more fantastic surprises. Yes, I am reading a script.
All right. I'm Frank Cipaldi, and the class I would be the best substitute teacher at, you know, really no matter what, I'm just going to put on a movie. So, like, just put me in any class. I'm not going to teach him.
Blasted.
I think it's the question is meant to be like job class in an RPG.
It's a little of both. It's what it looks like. Yeah.
I guess now that I've selected Geomancer, it is that.
Yeah.
It's not that on the page, but.
Right. I mean,
I nudged it in that direction. Yeah.
Yeah. We're all interpreting this in our own way.
I hate to, you know, toot my own horn here, but if it were just regular old high school classes, I could probably teach them all better than anybody who taught me and tried to teach me anything in high school. No offense, you know, to the public education system. Just about achieved a level of expertise that eclipses anyone who ever attempted to teach me any particular fact or another in virtually all fields. There's a guy who taught the German class in my school. He didn't speak German. I could teach German better than him. And that's not even one of my core languages, right? Anyway, it's Tim Rogers here, the class I perhaps possess the expertise requisite to substitute teach better than any other.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was trying to. No, the pause was not for indecision. It was I had started speaking that in E prime, and then realized I'd kind of painted myself into a sort of a D E primified corner there at the end. So I wanted to restart it from the beginning.
I saw the increasing expression on the face, which was very interesting.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I'm gonna need to say a B verb here. I was like, I started it with no B verb. Tim Rogers here. I perhaps possess expertise requisite to teach in a substitute capacity, the class of Red Mage better than any other. I don't know. Who cares?
There
I don't care anymore. It's an interesting time stamp at which to stop caring today, but that's fine. I don't care. Let's go.
I'm Brandon Sheffield, my substitute class, Animancer. You got one of those? I'll do that.
Does 14 have one of those now?
Hanging out with puppies. I don't know. There's one in, what's that game? Remnant 2 or whatever it's called?
That's one.
Yeah, so.
They found another remnant.
Yeah, they got a second one. I'm just trying to collect a whole gaggle.
I mean, there's nothing about the word remnant that indicates there should just be one remnant. Unless you're talking about the last remnant.
I'd love to talk about the last remnant.
Final Remnancy.
The Last Remnant is a pretty bad video game name, even though I like it as a video game name.
I remember my substitute teacher he was a soccer coach, and he was teaching history, and he pronounced them Bach and Beethoven.
I love that.
Oh, Bach and Beethoven.
It made me so angry. It made me just like see red, and I was like.
But now do you realize that it rules?
Yeah, no, it's pretty cool now.
You now realize that as a personality trait, that totally rules. We had a substitute teacher, shout out North Central High School, Indianapolis, Indiana, north side of Indianapolis, Indiana, 86th Street, 86th and Westfield. Anybody who went there in the 1990s knows of the substitute teacher who went by the mononym Blair, a man with a ponytail.
Oh, wow.
He was an aspiring actor. He was an aspiring writer. My suspicions indicate the man might have fancied himself something of a poet, given that he taught in rhyme.
Oh, no.
And
oh, no.
He was
oh, God.
The lamest clown shoeless clown who ever lived, according to any student that ever even, you know, so much as went to that school a day and a half. You'd end up seeing this guy because we're like one of the biggest high schools in the state. You know, my graduation was hours long because of the names. There's too many students. You know, there's always a class. Blair had he was on payroll, right? He was there all the time. I learned a lot about public speaking from Blair, I think, in hindsight, which is, you know, that's it. I don't want to be mean to Blair, but how not to do stuff, right? You know?
Rhyming,
it occurs to me now, he's probably not that much older than I am, which is weird.
Yeah, the older you get, the younger people older than you seem to get.
Yeah, well, I mean, in this case, it was like he was probably a recent college graduate. Mm-hmm. But the ponytail and the elbow patches on a tweed jacket did a thing. I mentioned Blair before on this podcast. You know, eagle-eared listeners, antelope-eared listeners will remember. Mm-hmm.
Blair lore is accumulating.
Yeah, Blair.
Okay.
I actually looked him up after that. Still alive.
Wow.
Guy like that, you'd think. Guy that far. A guy that tiny in one's rearview mirror. You'd just as soon assume dead, right?
Yeah.
You'd presume the man must have died. Turns out, no. Blair persists. He lives again.
I guess I will start reading questions, unless you have any more Blair-related
trivia. That's a good idea.
Now we'll fit him in there somewhere
else. Okay, yeah. We'll shoehorn Blair in. Okay, I have some questions here from listeners of the Insert Credit Podcast, or maybe patrons. This first one is from Footfoot, who asks... I recently had a great time with two buddies of mine playing King of Dragon Pass, all of us collectively making decisions for the clan and laughing together at the absurd results. It occurred to us that that was probably the best way to enjoy King of Dragon Pass, despite it being nominally a one-player game. Is there a single-player game that you feel is particularly suited to being played in a group setting? What are the makings of such a game?
Oh, Frank and I used to do this a bunch. In the olden times with
bad games.
Yeah,
I think that's kind of a it's become a bit trite to make fun of a video game, but I think the way that we were doing it, which was offline and with good intentions, was kind of all right. We played like that Universal Studios game.
Oh, I love that game.
Would you like to come inside?
so good. That's a Shenmue.
I think that in the process, we wound up finding a lot of what was fun about those games, in fact, because we were forcing ourselves to engage with them. And sometimes, you know, it was like really difficult. And so we'd pass the controller to somebody else who could do a better job. So that was actually a lot of those games were pretty fun single player experiences, especially like difficult, obtuse, quickly, cheaply made games that were licensed.
Well, and they, yeah, because they're janky, they lend themselves well to controller passing. You know, let me try.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Controller passing and also finding the fun yourself, because playing it by yourself as a child would probably not be that fun. But finding the fun around what the game is could be enjoyable. So that's
one. Well, that becomes a group activity as well, right? Like everyone kind of finds... Like, it's almost a creative exercise. Like, everyone kind of pokes and prods at it to find something fun to do. Like, you know, oh, look what happens if I run against this wall for a long time. Isn't that fun?
Yeah. Yeah, so it's a certain kind of a way to interact with a thing.
It's a certain kind of a way to interact with a thing.
Yeah, that's my vagary that I got going.
It's like your review quote on something.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that would go great on the Universal game, yeah.
Put it on the back of the box, slap it on there. I have been hoping that it would be nice if Final Fantasy 15, 16, sorry, if they come out with like a Game of the Year edition, they put a number one Game of the Year, insertcredit.com, on the back of the box, I would really feel like we had made it.
People don't do Game of the Year edition anymore. They do definitive edition.
Yeah, they do definitive or royal.
Yeah, I mean the gamers got no royal. Okay, no. Okay,
well, royal was specifically 15.
Yeah, no, royal was the royal edition of Final Fantasy 15 was I mean, who even knows what that was supposed to be?
It had all the DLC in it.
He's a royal.
He is a royal.
The guy, yeah.
Definitive edition usually implies there's like a frame rate boost, and it's for a modern, a newer platform, and they've just kind of bundled all the DLC together, and it's got better performance or whatever. I don't know.
Yep.
I will say, I don't know if I'm supposed to chime in.
You may.
I'll go for it.
Why, ew.
I will chime in. At the very beginning of COVID, Final Fantasy VII Remake came out, and my wife and I played through that together. I played it, and she just, you know, would hang out and watch. And that was like a really just tremendous experience of us like going through it and sort of seeing all the little shifts and changes the original.
Oh, yeah.
I will say, without saying anything substantive about it, that Final Fantasy VII Rebirth is not that game.
Oh, yeah.
It is no longer that game.
I've only played a very small amount of it, but it was
miserable.
It's very much a rat hole video game. You got to get in your rat hole to play it as a person. So in my response to this particular question, I guess nobody here wants to backhand slap the question asker and call them a fool. So I guess I'll do my best, because I do think it's a good question. I'll do my best to insult the question asker here. Is this the first time you ever did this? You never god darn did this before, Yidget? You can do this god darn any video game. We've been doing this since I was god darn 9 years old. We did this with Castlevania when I was a kid. I mean, I don't know. It's pretty easy, but particularly JRPGs. I had a neighbor, and I'm going to shout him out because this is fun for everybody to know. He's listening. I had a neighbor named Carl.
Oh, the original Carl.
I know he's listening through a pretty interesting series of recent events has brought to my attention that he is listening, if you can take a guess. My neighbor Carl, with whom we rented video games and played them on Friday nights when we were 10 years old, and that was fun. And playing through a JRPG, the original Final Fantasy with Carl. Yeah. And making decisions on which party members we choose at the beginning, what the party makeup is. Always trying to do a fresh, pristine run through. Let's try four monks, dude. Can we do four white mages, bro? You know? And then how do we handle this battle? Which spell should we purchase first, for example? JRPGs are real good for that. The problem is you need the attention span of a 10-year-old who has never heard of the Marvel Cinematic Universe or whatever suffices for plug into your veinsable entertainment these days. So, but I mean, I'm sure you can get a couple of adult friends together and kind of, you know, spaghetti buffet your way through a 16-bit JRPG in the year 2024 and have a grand old time about it.
I'm pretty sure we're all just describing streaming a game.
Yeah.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah,
but streaming it locally with live people in your house, I guess, is even better.
Number two, Spencer Gifts asks, what are your favorite moments when you have seen the video game developer's fingerprints?
The fingerprints. Well,
it's not when there's a cultural reference. So let's throw that one out.
I've been playing Xenogears, and I jumped in a well, and I jumped back out of the well. And then the game was like, you did a weird thing. Here's a little chime. And I liked that. Mm-hmm. That's my answer. Good.
I was going to say my favorite time I've seen the video game developer's fingerprints is that one time I...
yeah?
That one time I caught David Cage red-handed for murder.
Yeah.
That was the best time I've ever seen a game developer's fingerprints. Because, you know, his fingerprints, if I was that god darn guy, I just wouldn't commit any murders. Because his fingerprints are just like, it's like four concentric circles.
Yeah,
right?
So distinct.
It's like, it's so easy to tell.
I don't even need to like go get the kit.
Yeah, I just look at it and I go, my god, why did you kill this guy? Why'd you do it? And he goes, it was not me. And I'm like, you. And his hands are just dripping red. I'll think of another answer, though, in a moment.
So you don't get this too much anymore, but sometimes there's visual art cues that you're like, oh, that's that guy. So someone that comes to mind for me is this artist Mark Ferrari, who did a lot of the backgrounds in the like EGA 16 color days for Lucasfilm games, and he had to me a very distinctive dither, and I found out that years later And he actually did a GDC talk about this. He did the graphics in some, you know, kind of bad, like, plug-and-play systems. He did, like, a DreamWorks one and a an X-Men one. And that actually did really cool techniques that if you watch his GDC talk about his X-Men plug-and-play, it's really fascinating. Yeah, I loaded them babies up on MAME and, you know, kind of, like, I think it was the Shrek game. Just jumped to the top of the castle and it's like, oh, that's Loom back there. we're just in Loom. That is fine. A Mark Ferrari environment.
That's really cool.
One I'll mention, I've talked about this guy before, but I enjoy Toshihisa Hasegawa had a few games that were like, okay, you can jump on top of this really skinny platform and it jiggles back and forth. And every time that shows up, it's like, oh yeah, it's that guy. So like Psycho Fox. Then that magical hat, Butobi Turbo Daiboken, and then Decap Attack, which was made out of that game. And
there's an NES game too.
Yeah.
I forget which one it is, but yeah.
Is it Kid Kool?
Yes.
Yeah. So like this guy is just like, you know what I like? I like when you can jump on a skinny little platform and it wiggles back and forth. And
I think it's like, less that it's like, you know what I've got the code for.
It's almost certainly that, but it makes you think that this guy he just loves it.
Yeah.
This is like his one thing. He's like, I'm sneaking it in. Guys. I like that because it's so hyper specific. And nobody else did it but that guy. So
nobody.
Maybe somebody else did it.
So maybe my second favorite time I've ever seen a video game developer's fingerprints is when I was looking at some insider trading documents. I'm just kidding. That's Yuji Naka. You can feel that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
His fingerprints were also shaped. They were two concentric circles, like a sonic ring.
All over the bags of heroin, we found Peter Molyneux's fingerprints. It's very interesting. God,
Peter Molyneux, is he dead?
No.
He's not.
I could have
Are you sure?
Each of the 21 cans.
I feel kind of obligated to mention Pokemon.
Satoshi Tajiri.
Yeah, that one. You can go into Game Freak and you see all the developers working right there, which is like a reference to the FF4 developer room.
Love that developer room.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Is that a reference to the FF4 developer room?
I mean, knowing Game Freak, I would assume. I mean, you literally go into the room where they're making the game and they talk about it. I assume it is.
Could be.
They were big on. I mean, you need only look at the pixel art and the original Pokemons to know these guys were. They were Final Fantasy IV fans. FWIW, you know, video game developers' fingerprints. I didn't know this such and such a thing had existed. But I was playing Xenoblade Chronicles 2, and there's a part where you're first of all, you want to talk about fingerprints. Anything with Xeno at the beginning of the title, the X-E-N-O, is just kind of, it's a goddarn sneeze guard at an old country buffet in terms of fingerprints, when you get those people who make those things. But I did not know that the most legendary collaboration existed at all, because I'd received the game a couple weeks early to do like some video footage stuff, review related stuff for some website I was working for. There's a part in the story early-ish where you're like waiting for this team of tough dudes to show up to finish a job, and you're just kind of a little whiny child with your whiny friend, and you're waiting for the tough dudes to show up, and the tough dudes show up and they're so hard looking, and you're like, man, those are some straight up Tetsuya Nomura characters. And then they are. Tetsuya Nomura was hired to design these four characters to be these tough dudes that show up.
There's a lot of artists in that one.
Man, this Tetsuya Nomura is cool, is what I'm trying to say.
I'm going to throw in a quick one real quick. I like when there's messages in the binary code that are on like the cutting room floor wiki. That's a good fingerprint.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, those are great.
Yeah, me too. One guy really told on himself with that one in a way that is very disturbing. I won't.
The NES game? The Atlas one?
No, it's a PC Engine game where a guy wrote a tribute to a child murderer.
Oh, Lord.
He wrote a song to sing along with the theme song.
Yikes.
Do you know about the one in Bonk?
What?
No, what's it say?
There's like this horrible racist message in Bonk. I'm just kidding.
He's just kidding. It's in Bonk's Revenge.
I had this really elaborate plan to set up the creator of Bonk as a huge like racist, so that Brandon would be forced to denounce Bonk on Twitter, and it was going to be my April Fool's Day joke this year. But then I decided that was a little too cruel,
because Brandon would have totally fallen for it. I'm just letting you know that.
I let you off easy.
Well, you okay? Look, man, it's all Twitter.
I know
it's all Twitter.
Yeah.
You would have fallen for it. I'm letting you know that I let you god darn off the hook.
Thanks, because
I started to get bored.
Question number three. Brindo asks, what are everyone's thoughts on permanently missable items in RPGs?
It's great.
I don't care for them myself.
Yeah. I think it's fine.
That wasn't me talking. I like them. Brindo doesn't like them.
I think it's fine. You can obsess about it or not, I guess. It depends on your personality type.
Yeah.
If you got to catch them all, then that could be a real difficultitude. But if you can find a way to enjoy it in a more casual, leisurely manner, I have no problem with missables. I don't love missable story, I guess. That's a harder one for me, because I want to have all the interactions that I can have, basically. But if there's a super cool legendary sword or something that I'm missing, I'm okay with missing it, because it's probably behind something complex and obtuse that takes me away from the main part of the game that I enjoy. And so it's probably not for me, but that's my very specific answer.
I think the best missable stuff in games, in RPGs in particular, is it's behind virtually no effort whatsoever. And it's just there's a door you could have gone in and gotten this thing if you just slowed down a tiny bit.
Should have turned left.
Talk to all the townspeople,
I think that's the best kind of missable thing, and I actually think that the presence of such things, and this is, I'm coming from the perspective of being a big-time Dragon Quest guy, I'm coming from the perspective of a guy who let Shadow die the first time I played Final Fantasy VI, because I didn't know. How are you supposed to know you could let that guy, you could save him, right? The game was very obtuse about it. And that's not even really missable story past a certain point. It's a story either way. They make a story work either way. I'm coming from, that's my perspective on this. And I think these things are the texture of just RPGs in general. And I feel like without that sort of thing, you can't have a frictionless sort of user experience on these things. Otherwise, the friction is the thing, you know?
Yeah.
You got to let people find stuff out, I feel. And it's hard to do that without missables. And missable is also an interesting kind of a word, because one of my favorite games that I always mentioned, Rocket Slime, Dragon Quest Rocket Slime Adventures, at the end of that game, there's all this extra stuff you can do. And it's certainly missable if you don't beat the game. Is that really missable? It's like a bunch more of the kind of stuff you could do earlier in the game, but it's after the game is over. And if you don't beat it, then you can't do, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, that's just your typical, that's your Dragon Quest. That's kind of the meat of the Dragon Quest missability aspect. I think that's pretty tasty.
I'm not really sure if we're going to get to all this stuff that I want to do in Demon School, but some of the stuff that I want to be able to do is missable in the sense that you can just not do it if you don't want to. It's just like present, and you can do it or not, but it's not going to kill you if you don't.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what I was going to say. I don't think the missable part is important. I think I disagree that that's the texture of an RPG. I think the texture of an RPG is optional things that you could or could not do. That doesn't necessarily mean you can never go back and do it.
To get a little more specific, when I say it's the texture of an RPG, I say the texture of an RPG is when you get to the end, you're like, oh, I did it this way. I chose to do it this way. Yeah. This is how it happened for me. And missable things are just they're an aspect of that. They're a facet of it.
Makes sense.
I agree with you there.
I think a lot about the Tower of Draga, just generally in my life. You know, that's kind of the first RPG in a certain angle. Not necessarily. We'll call it that. And like, to play that game and get to the end of it, you have to get a secret item on like the second stage. And so like, if you don't get that item, like your run after that is completely wasted. And you take that and you extrude it out into like Dark Souls, where like the DLC and the secret endings, like the true ending, stuff like that, you have to sort of foster, like you have to make friends. You have to talk to people about the game outside of the game. You have to put a little notebook on the arcade cabinet so people know to get the fast shoes in stage two so that they don't waste their credits, right? And like there's a cultural, as much as RPGs stem out of pen and paper and, you know, rolling dice and D&D, having missables and having this texture in an RPG of I did this, I could have done that. It fosters that same, you know, community and culture around the game, outside of the game, that I think, yeah, without that, I mean, it's just Netflix, right? Like, it's just like, I'm doing the thing linearly. It is the premise of it to have like sort of all the content laid out for you to sort of consume? Or is it like, I could have done this, I could have done that, I missed this, I missed that, these were choices I made, right? Like, you're having a conversation with the software instead of it just being...
As you're saying all this, I just keep thinking, man, Final Fantasy VII Remake is so good, dude.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it has so many little things you can miss, so many little quests you can decide not to do.
Mm-hmm.
So the Wall Market quest ending with a different cutscene, you know, depending on what dress you get or whatever. All that stuff. I mean, right down to, like, do you get all of the materia in the Mako Reactor 5? Do you do all of the side quests in Chapter 14, right? It's like, that's just, they kind of hit on every single delicious flavor of that sort of thing.
I think just to add with Juraga, I think the important element there is that you do get an ending if you don't get that death.
Right, sure.
So, like, it doesn't...
But you get the game basically telling you you're an idiot.
Yeah, but still, it's like it still goes somewhere. It just doesn't go the same way.
Sure. Yeah. It's the same thing as letting Shadow die, though, right? Like, qualitatively.
It doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you want to take the break now, let's do it. Let's do it.
Okay, I'm going to do it.
All right.
Well, I'm just
going to
stay here. All right.
Well, Brandon's dead. He evaporated. Hey, Frank, have you ever seen a dog?
I have. Oh, not this one, though. This is the new one for me.
Wait, you haven't seen this one?
Yeah, I do know.
You haven't seen this dog? The other day, some lady was walking her Pomeranian on the street, and she saw this one, and she's like, oh, that's a beautiful dog, and just asked all the same questions that she'd asked about this dog before.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, how can you not remember this dog? Look at this weird thing. There's no dog that looks like this around here. This dog is jet black.
You could just dye that other dog over there and then you get relatively close.
I've returned.
No, he's Sonic. We're going to dye him blue.
Oh, okay.
Can you do that? So the next question is, Krumar Bones asks, what game series should IO Interactive adapt into a Hitman Warriors spinoff? For example, a Sam & Max game in the Hitman format.
Oh.
So I don't get the Warriors part.
It's
like there's a Musou for every kind of thing. Like, yeah.
Warriors Musou as in they're just plopping it into
their
existing format.
Okay.
As we all know, they are currently probably extremely hard at work on making what will likely be a legendarily good James Bond video.
Oh, okay. I must have known that because in the back of my head, I was like, James Bond, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. I just need to reiterate. I need to just say this, go on the record again, is saying that game's going to own so hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
And people are going to be so blown away by it. People who've never touched a Hitman are going to have their minds shattered by that game when it comes out.
Well, I mean, it sounds like the promise of what I loved about GoldenEye without the stuff that I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's so, I mean, just piggybacking on the idea of James Bond, because obviously James Bond is the correct answer that this question cleverly asks us to avoid, right? Because it being the true answer, even though it probably won't be a Hitman, I guess, it'll probably be something, they're going to do something a little new. Maybe it'll be a little more like Kane and Lynch.
I'd like The Prisoner Hitman.
The Prisoner could be cool.
Mm. Yeah, the 60s The Prisoner. That's a pretty good show. Could be some neat, weird stuff going on in there.
You know, I mean, just to get it out of the way, Batman. There's already a Batman series, but what if there was another one?
There's not anymore, though.
Not right now. Yeah, exactly.
There hasn't been a new one in, what, like a decade at this point?
Yeah, they finished the Batman over 10 years ago or so.
Oh, man, I bought that Arkham Knights for $5 on Steam.
Oh, yeah?
Don't do it.
What's wrong with it on Steam? Does it just not work?
No, just the Steam part isn't the issue here. It's the game itself. I don't remember. I might have actually requested my $5 back. I think I might have cut it off at like an hour 59 and went, no, they don't even get my $5.
I think that if they insisted, if there was just no way to avoid the world where Metal Gear is being trotted out, if we just have to, I would say that because MGSV is already basically Far Cry 2, and mm-hmm. the Hitman games are basically Far Cry 2, that it yeah. would make the most sense to give them the option to like sort of take the espionage action part and really lean into it. You know, have like the reactive Rube Goldberg machine level design. That's already in MGSV. So I think that would be smart, but I do not want this. This is not a request. Please let it stay dead.
I mean, same for what I was going to say, which is like, I kind of want them to be handed lots and lots of money to add some more RPG stuff to it, but probably not really. I'd rather them just stick to what they're good at. It would be kind of cool to give them, I guess because I'm watched the show and I'm playing a game now, like something like a Fallout, you know, give them like an actual like persistent world with these set pieces in them. You know, like a Hitman level is like a dungeon in an RPG. Like there could be something fun there.
Yeah, I honestly think, I mean, Hitman levels are, I mean, you know, they're technically, there literally is a famous Hitman level, there's curtains down, that is in an opera house. I feel like Hitman levels are the perfect ultimate AAA-ified, the final iteration of the opera house in Final Fantasy VI, where it's an RPG dungeon, but it's also a cutscene, and it's also an event that has decisions that impact the flow of the narrative. I feel like if you had an RPG that was just a cool story that had one of these big Hitman dungeons every couple hours, you'd have solid gold, right?
Yeah.
How about a bunch of historical Chinese figures, but a fictionalized version of them? What about that?
Talking like a Three Kingdoms.
Yeah.
There weren't enough social functions that were infiltrated by individuals adept at subterfuge in the whole of the Three Kingdoms narrative. There weren't quite enough of those. Yeah. Whereas, man, just thinking about this James Bond game they're going to make, it probably is going to be a sort of an RPG that has Hitman dungeons in it.
Oh, man.
It's probably what it's going to be. Because, I mean, there's clearly, like, it's just the lowest. I mean, the fruit is touching the ground. The fruit has dirt on it.
Who's going to play be a casino. The Bond in this? What's the Bond going to look like, I wonder?
Very good question. That's very good question.
Troy Baker.
Bald and have a barcode on his neck.
Yeah, dude, and gloves.
Oh, what if it turns out it was Agent 47 dressed as James Bond?
Oh, that'd be good,
That would rule.
That's the twist ending.
It's kind of wild that both James Bond and Indiana Jones have like the best game ever just over the horizon.
Yeah. That Indiana Jones game looks so good.
Counting the days. I cannot wait.
They're Uncharted.
That's going to be, it doesn't look like Uncharted though. It looks like Wolfenstein. Riddick. It looks like Wolfenstein and or Riddick. Yeah.
That's Weirdenstein.
You like the Wolfenstein games, Brandon. It's them. They darn made it.
Oh, it's machine games. Yeah.
You should watch the preview for it, dude.
It's got like M-Sim
watch
stuff
the trailer.
Going on,
yeah. All right, you're gonna scream at it.
It's amazing.
It's insane how cool that trailer is.
Maybe I will scream.
People are mad that it's first person though, but it's like,
it's awesome.
Nah.
It's shooting so cool. Nazis.
Yeah, we'll do it. Yeah. It definitely had one of like the best game reveal trailers I've seen in a very long time. It's like a GoldenEye moment.
First person Uncharted sequence is so cool.
Yeah, it looks so good.
Okay, real quick, any like Groundhog Day kind of IP that I'm not thinking of?
Groundhog Day, it could just be Groundhog Day.
So when we say IP, are we talking like movies and stuff, right?
It's whatever you want. Like if we could ask them to do a Groundhog Day game, we could cart Bill Murray out. And
I think a Shu Takumi, like a Ace Attorney thing would make a lot of sense.
Yeah. Shoot, talk to me. That guy's
Yakuza.
You really need
Capcom
to give him money.
Should just let that fellow make whatever he wants. I don't know why they got him stored up in the vault or whatever. Just let him make some more stuff.
I'm just going to say this and leave this here. I think IO Interactive should make Final Fantasy 17.
Sure.
Yeah?
Sure.
Let's just give him. There you go. That's my answer. Let's just give him
I'll
that.
Check it out.
Make just give
Final
it to
Fantasy
somebody.
17. Just let him do it. They need to get weird. Like, Final Fantasy 16, Game of the Year, proved to me they just got to get weird with it every time.
Yeah.
Getting weird with it is their mission statement, and they've only now gotten weird enough for me to think they should get weirder every time.
I buy that.
IO Interactive, where your main character of Final Fantasy 17 is like a spy, a secret agent.
That would be cool.
In a fantasy world.
Next question. Sneaking Mission asks, if you were to donate a fraudulent item to a video game history museum,
blessed,
what plausible but heretofore non-existent artifact would you fabricate to sow maximal confusion to future video game historians?
Bloody fingerprints on a copy of Detroit Become Human.
Perfect concentric circles, yeah. I want to point out one that is real, and I'm not going to implicate the person because I think this is awesome. Someone who does modern homebrew for old systems as a form of activist art to essentially like make people rethink what could have been in video game history has donated one of their cartridges to a university archive with information telling them that this is a real old game from the time and it is cataloged as such because they don't know better. I think that's a really cool version of that, right? Like it's almost an active, almost an activision, a form of activism to challenging what history could have been by canonizing something that would have never was as history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that is pretty cool.
What would I do? I guess the place to start would be games that people know about but haven't found yet. So like before you had your Bioforce Ape,
yeah,
for somebody to make a fakery of that sort of thing. And it's weird how you got like Yeah Yeah Beebus 2 now.
Yeah.
That's weird. Is it called Yeah Yeah Beebus? There's one other word, isn't there?
The original was I, like Roman numeral 1.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah Beebus I or 1. And then somebody went out and made Yeah Yeah Beebus 2 or II.
Well, he wanted to call it Yeah Yeah Beebus I, and I asked him not to because of what happened with Bioforce Ape, which is the game wasn't found yet. Someone made a fake one, and a lot of people think the fake one is the real one.
Right. So I guess that's the classic thing to do, is that.
And, you know, it wasn't even on purpose. It's just that people don't know their stuff. So they Google Bioforce Ape. They see this frankly terrible homebrew and they go, oh wow, Seta was awful.
I do
not like that.
Oh, Seta was awesome.
Seta was awesome.
Seta was so cool. They did the first mapper, didn't they?
Seta.
Did they?
I thought it was for like a shogi game or something.
I could see that. I want to look into that now. Yeah,
they built the first modem into the N64, I'm pretty sure.
Violence Island round one. Seta versus Sega. What do we got?
Oh man.
Round two, Kemco versus Namco. What do we got?
Whoa.
Okay, oh, no.
We can think of more later. I'm
TNE Soft versus Squaresoft.
Oh, TNE.
I love TNE Soft. A
little bit of TNE. Tacos and enchiladas.
Oh yeah, unreleased game stuff, right? Like that's the obvious thing.
Yeah,
right?
Mother 3 or Shenmue on the Saturn.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, you submit something that like it's be too easy to fix with digital forensics, but like submit something that you're like, look, I think this is Mother 3, but it's broken, right? And it's just like an N64 dev flash cart with some garbage on it.
Yeah, people would be searching and speculating about that forever.
Get some every time. I would like falsify some sketches on a notepad. That's like the very first character design of Mario, but it would be very clearly just a plagiarized Pringles mascot. Something like that, I think, would be fun.
I like that, yeah.
I think I could, this would require more resources than I possess. I've mentioned many times the weird little Mario that's in a stall, an early Saturn game.
Yeah,
I would fabricate there being more to that. So like it start with something that is real, the little weird Mario being in a stall, and then be like, actually, did you know there's a level where you can play as Mario that's like hidden deep in the code? Like hack an existing game to have more to its legend than it had previously.
Okay, so hack a game and say this is like a pre-release version before they cut this content.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, because there have been so many weird things found lately in like Saturn demos and stuff.
Yeah. There's a real like we're in the golden age of people like digging into Saturn demo discs and looking.
Wild to see. Yeah.
We're also in the golden age of like teenagers discovering every other day that Spider-Man was in a Genesis Shinobi game or whatever, and it's like the stuff that's real is being remembered. It's being discovered by new people. You could slip a fake one in there pretty easy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd submit some kind of something that Miyamoto said. I'd just say that Miyamoto said something and then...
Yeah. Well, oh. I mean, we already have that thing where it's like the people have canonized a quote that never existed about him saying that something about how like people don't care if a game's terrible as long as it has interesting graphics in reference to Donkey Kong Country or something.
Yeah, and the delay and game thing.
It's not what he said. And, you know, the quote is like from an unscanned magazine, an issue of Electronic Games, which I have. So I looked and I posted pictures like he didn't say it. There's nothing in here about that.
And there's also the quote about a good game is good forever. A bad game is a delayed game can be good, and a bad game fool me once or whatever. Like, yeah, there's that one as well.
Something about glass house and rocks. Yeah.
Choose someone who has very few credits on Nintendo games, if you can find such a person, but worked on a game with Miyamoto, and then find evidence that that's actually his wife and that Miyamoto's wife did work on one of the games with him, and this is the one.
That's not a piece of memorabilia, though, unless you're
that's true,
it.
A fraudulent item.
I forgot that part.
So you're saying Shigeru Miyamoto's marriage license.
Yeah, there you go.
With a different name on it.
He has no wife.
Shigeru Miyamoto's wife is a ghost. Find out more.
Visit your local game library.
Polterwife.
She made Geist. That's what happened there. Okay, next question. Honky Tonk Tom asks, what are some real-world businesses that have GTA-style business names? For example, there's a chain of ice cream parlors in Massachusetts named Daddy's Dairy.
Daddy's Dairy.
I unfortunately don't know what those are like. Those
my brain's names. Been shredded, goblinized, living in New York, where it's just everything just seems like a GTA thing. So I'm the opposite. Everything just seems like GTA. What's the name of the Kentucky Fried Chicken in GTA? It's like Cluckin' Hut, something like that.
Something like that. Yeah.
GTA, it's very interesting if you're a guy who likes thinking of names for stuff. It's very interesting how brazenly lazy all of the names for organizations and fast food franchises and such are ingrained. Like, okay, so I mean, brazenly lazy, like, cannot be overstated how bizarrely lazy some of the names for things are. So Brandon, I'll tell you this. In Grand Theft Auto 5, which first of all, it's been 10 years, but check out Grand Theft Auto 5, everybody, if you want to play a game. If you want to play a game that's pretty good. If you want to play a game and I mean, it's the number one selling single player video game of all time, or whatever, something like that. And it's, you know, makes the most money of any video game in existence because of the multiplayer. Whatever, something like that. It's a record-breaking game. It's also really fun to play if you want to know about how a game should be paced and how it should, you know. It's very easy to play, get into. Again, even Mimsy, who does not play AAA video games, kind of smoked the whole god darn thing very fast. So it's a situation. Anyway, in Grand Theft Auto 5, there is, speaking of video games, it's fun to watch a person play and make decisions on with them. Grand Theft Auto 5, a very good one for that, to play with a buddy who's not using a controller. There is a Facebook. Okay, Brandon, get ready for this.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do a quick temperature check. Brandon, Frank, have you played Grand Theft Auto 5?
No.
Okay, I want to do a quick temperature check. We're going to go Brandon, then Frank. What do you think Grand Theft Auto's in-world equivalent of Facebook is called?
Well, since I don't really know by what conventions they're British. So we're just going to see.
They're British.
It's like British South Park jokes, yeah.
You said Brandon's first, right? Okay.
Yeah, South Park jokes, but I mean, again...
Like worse than that.
This is why we're doing this exercise, because you don't know. And when I tell you, you'll understand what the level is. Now, I must say, before this, anything you know about Red Dead Redemption, L.A. Noire, Red Dead Redemption 2, games that are written with intensely meticulous attention to historical and linguistic detail. Anything you know about those games, forget about it.
All right.
Like a Goodfellas reference, forget about it for a second with Grand Theft Auto. Same writers, but they've got a slightly different variant of the common cold when they're writing this one. I don't know what it is. What do you think Facebook is called in the world of Grand Theft Auto?
God.
Also, for bonus, what do you think an iPhone is called in the world of Grand Theft Auto?
Yeah, I just don't know. Mentioning the South Park angle makes me feel like it's going to be a stupid butt joke or something.
Think that it's like if South Park is a 10 in terms of satire, Grand Theft Auto is like a 4.8.
It's like if South Park didn't put effort into
it. They go a little less than halfway. Well, no, South Park puts, I would say, too much effort into it. Where Grand Theft Auto puts an amount of effort into it that's just annoying.
So, can I go first? Because I have my answers.
Yeah, go for it.
Let's hear it. What do you got? What's an iPhone? What's Facebook?
In that order?
You do either order you want.
Spy phone and fake book.
Okay, very, very, very good. All right. Didn't mean to indicate too strongly. Brandon, what do you think? iPhone and Facebook.
Facebook, I'm going to go even lower effort and just call it FacePlace.
FacePlace, okay.
And iPhone, Y-phone.
All right.
My phone?
Crystalie, you might know the answers here, right?
I haven't played GTA 5, but I know.
You said my
tone.
Phone? You
I
said
think it's my
phone?
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to, you're, that's, this is, we're playing touch move chess here.
Yeah, I think it's my phone and Facebook, isn't it?
Okay, my phone and Facebook. All right, it is. I just feel like, how am I going to even, why would I even bother to answer now? It's called iFruit.
God, that's right.
Ew.
And Facebook is called Life Invader.
Oh.
Which is so bad and so much worse than you'd think.
Life
right?
Invader.
It is
Life
worse
Invader.
Than I think. Yeah,
it's.
Wasn't that a Taito or a Tecmo game?
Yeah, I'd play it.
Life Invader is just, it's like so on the nose that it's like beyond idiocracy. I was going to say idiocracy. It's like beyond idiocracy levels of just, you can tell the person who came up with that doesn't really think too much, too highly of the people of the United States of America in general. And also, you know, just people who use social media. It's a little, it's like beyond Black Mirror.
iFruit just doesn't make sense.
Because it's a fruit. It's like a piece of fruit. It's a instead of an apple, it's a different, more nebulous type of fruit
on the back
of the phone. So they call it an iFruit.
There's like a sneering quality to it all. It
somehow feels like something, but it also, I mean, we all know that Grand Theft Auto has within seconds of starting Grand Theft Auto Vice City, one is offered a choice between a car and a scooter. And when you board the vehicles, the name of the vehicle is displayed very largely on the screen. Should you choose the scooter, you view a hyper-stylized? No. You view a just barely stylized extension of a vile slur. So it's, there's weird levels of American schoolyard homophobia just kind of dripping all over the way they name everything in Grand Theft Auto games.
That's terrible.
I guess I would say there's a Bermuda Triangle. It's South Park, Penny Arcade, and what's the third point on the triangle? The triangle that Grand Theft Auto just occupies the perfect space between there.
It's like 2003 Comedy Central.
Conker's Bad Fur Day.
Well, Conkers is like trying a lot.
Maybe it's that like Unite Democrats Facebook page or something. Like one
something
of those.
Like that.
Something like that, yeah.
So yeah, anyway, you have to think of something that's Grand Theft Auto 5 does not have anything so overt as the vile three-letter the homophobic slur thrown in your face within the first 4 minutes of the game as a funny name for an Italian Vespa-style scooter. Doesn't have that. Grand Theft Auto 5 is much more mature by those standards, but there's still plenty in there. Yeah, basically, what was the question again? Local business?
It's way past time, so we're
yeah, I think we gotta move
on to the next one.
I'm telling whoever this guy is, check out some of the vape shops in Queens or whatever, and just kind of squint at those names.
Yeah, there's an iPhone repair shop in Seattle called You Break iFix, and the U is
you
the letter
iFix.
U. And
that's
it's one
pretty
where,
good.
Yeah,
that's pretty good. You Break iFix. There's a lot of brand names in Grand Theft Auto that are not like clever or trying, and that actually does feel like it's informed by a visit to New York.
Yeah.
So
there's a bodega in Oakland. I guess they call it a smoke shop, but it looks more like a bodega to me.
Mm-hmm.
MLK and 55th rebranded, maybe a new owner or something. Very expensive looking sign. I find this name very funny, and if it's a reference to something I don't want to know, I'm posting it in general.
Okay. What do we got? Gorilla
oh my
Zone.
God.
The Gorilla Zone.
Gorilla Zone.
The Gorilla Zone?
Yeah.
Shoot.
That is funnier to me than any business name.
Welcome to the Gorilla Zone.
So here in New York, we have a popular halal cart called Halal Guys, right?
Yeah, we have that here too. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's okay. It's from New York.
Okay.
Transplants, Seattle transplants.
Don't claim any ownership over it. Anyway, there's a kosher pizzeria near my house that recently closed. Blasted, right? First of all, kosher pizza is pretty good if you ever want to try some pizza. It closed a couple months ago, and now I just was walking by it last night on the way back from my storage unit. I noticed that it's being opened as a halal chicken restaurant.
I thought you were going to say a halal vape shop.
No, halal vapes are, that's all vapes, Carl. Yeah. That's all vapes. Yeah. Did it send? Did it not send? There we go.
Halal Chick.
It's called Halal Chicks. It's what this halal chicken restaurant is called. Very funny. Because it's halal guys, but it's chicken. It's Halal Chicks.
The logo looks like the Chick-fil-A logo. Like, it looks pretty.
Yeah, it does. Good. It does. Huh. It does, which I think is very funny.
Do y'all have Chick-fil-A over there?
Oh, we got them, yeah. Russian tourists ask me all the time.
Homophobia chicken.
Lots and lots of Russian tourists stop me on the street and say, excuse me, there's a Chick-fil-A, like that. And I'm like, oh, what? Like, it's very strange. It's always Russian people.
Okay, next question. Kiko B. asks, what earnest advice would you give someone who aspires to the mythological job position of idea guy?
Shoot. Do some stuff, read some books, travel.
Yeah.
Work up. Definitely have a job in retail, the food service. Have job experience at the very least.
I disagree.
Make stuff.
I think for one to have the coveted position of idea guy, one needs to be a terrible person and fail upward.
Be born rich.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's the only way to be an idea.
I was angling mine as a, if it were a real thing and a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But every real life idea guy I've ever known of has just been a rich boy. Yeah. Right.
I will say that one could qualify my job as idea guy to some extent. I think that if you, because I was born rich.
You fell upward, yeah.
I direct the video game. I do not do the code. There's a lot of things that I don't, there's more things I don't do than do. But if you're going to be in that position, you have to have a strong understanding of what makes a game good and how other people work. You have to really talk to people and listen to them. You also have to have other things that you contribute to the team, because I'm also like the writer and the biz dev person and getting the money and paying everyone and all that stuff. You could call me an idea guy in that I have the idea for the game, but I don't do any of the implementation. Yeah, the real key to actually being in a position where you have the ideas is, first of all, for your ideas to be good. Second of all, for them to be executable. You have to understand how to execute those ideas, how other people will execute them. You should try to do a little bit of all that stuff yourself so you can sort of actually get into understanding it.
We have a lot of idea guys in the video game industry right now. There's tons of them, and lots of them are very successful. And the secret to all of them is they make the video game all by themselves.
Yes.
If you, and I understand, I was talking about this on a live stream a couple weeks ago, and I think Kiko Bell was watching, which is where this question might have or might not have come from. I really can't stress enough, just speaking from like what I do all day, every day, is you have to be able to do everything that everyone working for you does by yourself. You have to be able to, and you have to be ready to, and you have to be willing to. What money gets you is the ability to hire people to do it faster and better. You know, not cheaper, but faster and better. Somehow faster and better unite when such a situation comes into existence. But in order to be a true leader of a successful thing, you have to be able to do all the stuff. In my opinion, not that I've ever succeeded at any of this stuff, but it's just, that's how I feel. That's what I feel like I know at this point in my life. You know, make of that what you will. I've made sure to learn at least a little bit of all the programming related stuff, 3D modeling programs and all of that. And, you know, I can do the level designs and the Unreal scripts and the JavaScripts and the C sharps. And I can list programming languages and video game engines all day. And you would believe me too. if it weren't for these darn kids. But also, to be an idea guy, the mythical idea guy, you have to, number one, have ideas that are good. Number two, have an idea for a video game somebody god darn wants to play. And then number three, you have to also think it's a good idea. I was, I look around at trailers. People send me trailers for their games, or they send me builds of their games. And sometimes I just got to say, I wonder, you know, who actually wants to play this?
Yeah, it's really, I see a lot of stuff where it feels like nobody was excited about it at any time.
Yeah, yeah.
And that it doesn't have like a hook or a drive. It's like, what? I think a lot right now about why do we make any of the stuff that we make, because it's hard and it takes so much out of us to do it. And all the gamers are angry about everything. And it's like, what are we doing it for?
Yeah.
For somebody to not have any teeth in their video game, anything to hang your hat on. I wonder, it's like double, extra, triple. What are they doing it for? You're not going to get rich off it.
I don't want to put nobody on blast, but I saw a video game trailer recently and I was just like, my God, there's got to be like a couple million dollars behind this. And it's just the lamest, most limp noodle thing. And I'm just like, I feel so sad about how, I just know how the people working on this thing must feel. And it's like, it's not that hard to get off your high chair, you know, and play a couple of the games that are popular and then have honest opinions and feelings about them and then let that honestly inform your own idea guy ideas. But I would say the best thing about being the best way to be a good idea guy is just be real lucky, I guess. You know, being born rich or live lucky. One of those two things, right? Probably about it. If you see a hot iron, strike it. Right?
Yeah.
If you see a hot iron and you possess the striking implement, go on, give it a strike. If not, you can't manufacture a hot iron. You got to heat it up. And that might take your whole career. It took most of my career to heat up a particular iron. Won't say what it is, because that would be basically giving somebody else the keys to my Cadillac, as it were. It took my whole career to heat up a particular iron. Now here I am scrambling for a striking instrument. It's tough to be an erstwhile wannabe ideas guy. Because I'm pretty sure our question asker, Kiko Bill, I know your full name. Don't pretend you're somebody else. Sure the question asker knows of my my own personal grappling with the idea of being an idea guy. What a tangled web we weave, Charles.
Indeed.
I think I figured it out in a truck heck, by the way. Just let everybody know that. It's going to be a goatee. Ooh. Add the sweet, sweet aroma of goatee.
It's goatee time. Next question. Yeso asks, what would be the gamer version of Gift of the Magi?
I don't know. Sonic and Mario, the Olympic Games, like, right? Mario and Sonic are together. Sega made a Mario. Nintendo made a Sonic. That's not exactly how it went, right? And then it's like both of them ended up cutting off all of their hair, and both of them ended up giving each other a comb. The gamer version of Gift of the Magi would have too many side quests, and the ending would be, instead of ironic, it would be quadruple ironic, so that Ken Levine could get patted on the back so hard his scapula would turn into bone powder. That's what the gamer version of Gift of the Magi would be. It'd be directed, called Magi, directed by Ken Levine. Oh, Henry. Oh, sweet Henry aroma.
They named a candy bar after that guy. Weird.
Sweet Henry. You ever read some of O. Henry's other short stories? There's one that's like literally just the exact plot of the movie Joker. I'm joking. That's not true. But you believed me for a second, didn't you?
I did for a second.
Yeah. There's one about how the director of Bonk is a huge racist.
There's the Xbox during the 360 era of like, we're going to court Japanese developers with some of the best games they've ever made. And then the audience wasn't really there, but still in Japan, the Xbox 360 was kind of like the secret otaku console. It's got like a bunch of really cool dating sims, the dungeon crawler experience, all the experience games came out on there, obviously Cave.
I knew some true smokers in Japan who had a 360 but had not even owned a PS2.
Yeah.
Man, you want to hear something weird?
I know a few people like that.
There are still not as many PlayStation 5s sold in Japan as there were Xbox 360s. So
that's
something.
It's interesting.
I had no idea.
Yeah,
the Switch has kind of taken over.
I didn't think about that until right now, but there's only been 5 million, right?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
PS5s sold, and 360 had at least 6 million sold.
Well, if the PS5 had Mushihime-sama Futari, maybe things would be different.
That maybe would be different.
The PS5's about to have Under Defeat HD.
I know, yeah.
Yeah, well, there we go.
What's the other one?
Over Defeat?
Doesn't matter, Under Defeat. Under Defeat.
Yokai, the one with Yokai Disco. Mamoru-kun Curse. That's the one.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one, too.
Yeah.
I'm a big Under Defeat buff.
They got pretty good music in that game. I don't know if you heard
Under Defeat.
About that. Yeah.
I like when that crab sings Under Defeat.
Under Defeat. Under Defeat is a
that's topical, that new crab game.
There's actually a visual novel called Under Defeat that's about being trampled on by a 12-foot tall girl.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah, and that's Gift of the Magi.
So Gift of the Magi has this simple irony to it that I would not trust any video game writer pulling off. The simple, delicious irony of the couple that so loved one another that they would, if I recall this correctly, let's see how good my knowledge of American folksy short stories is. The man has a beautiful pocket watch, and all he desires is a fob, a watch fob. A gold watch fob to match the splendor of his watch. His wife has beautiful hair. And what does she desire? I don't know. She doesn't really... Her desire doesn't...
Women
really
didn't have desire back then. It was too early.
Her desire doesn't enter too much into the story. But desire, having no desire does not mean she cannot feel delight. In fact, we could applaud O. Henry for minimalism, for simplicity, by only giving one of the people a desire, because they both desire to give gifts. Right. So one of them needs to have a specific gift in mind so that the gifts of the Magi can go so awry. What happens is the husband sells his beautiful gold pocket watch so that he can afford to buy some beautiful, luxurious combs. And his wife sells her beautiful golden hair to a wig maker so that she can afford to buy him or her husband a golden pocket watch fob. And then they end up with gifts that are unnecessary, much like the gifts given by the three kings of the Orient to little baby Jesus as he lay in the manger were ultimately unnecessary.
Yeah, what's that kid going to do with myrrh?
I do actually have some frankincense going in my aroma diffuser at this exact moment. Nice. So whatever that means.
Smelling of Frank.
I've given Frank enough time to solve the puzzle.
I've done it.
All right.
It is... bringing together Naka and Oshima for another game together.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah. That's true. That's true.
And creating something that has no utility for anyone.
They both sacrifice
Balan Wonderworld.
Something.
That would be the
it's
game.
Balan 2.
Yeah, I wish it wasn't so boring. I was really hoping it would be like exciting.
More like Boron Wonderworld?
I found ways to find it interesting, but we've gone into that at length.
So. You haven't played Mario Odyssey. So.
I find ways to tie my shoes interesting. It's not sure, you know sure. You don't have to it's you can make something, you make anything into some fun should you try deliciously enough.
People should play it with their friends on a couch.
Wouldst thou like to live deliciously? Then follow Brandon Sheffield on this tour of how to enjoy Balan Wonderworld.
Yeah,
it's no Rodea the Sky Soldier, though, I'll say.
Oh, yeah, Rodea the Sky Soldier. I think Mario version. And Sonic the Olympic Games is my first impulse is somewhat close to what I feel like an earnest answer to this question would wind up being for me if this were some sort of essay format exam and this were the only question and I had 3 hours.
Yeah.
I feel like I would be able to tweak like a Sonic game on a Nintendo console, right? Like,
yeah. Yeah.
The people hear Gifts of the Magi and they immediately think of the monkey's paw, right? That's not exactly what it is. They're not
no,
the same
it's not.
Thing.
There's no curse here. Yeah, just,
I feel like people think of it. I feel like I have a tendency to. So, and I, you know, believe it or not, do not consider myself in any way unique. I assume there's thousands of people who think the same way. You know, there's that.
Yeah, that's why you. I thought of the 360, because it's like they tried really hard to JP devs, and then it was like, oh, we actually have stuff, but we're not going to localize that. But here's Lost Odyssey. Nobody bought it. Because we didn't
advertise it. Lost Odyssey's so good, dude.
I need to play it so bad. Lightning round. This week, we're doing a lightning round of video games questions. we've received since the last time we swept them out of the dirt bag. For each of these, you will have 30 seconds to determine a definitive answer. Toku asks, what is the David Burns big suit of video games? Go.
Ooh, Metal Gear Solid Microwave Tunnel. Metal Gear Solid 4.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I was going to say the Genesis Tower of Power. Just all those things stacked up on top of each other.
I'm thinking more in terms of just the concept of the suit getting one size bigger per song and eventually being revealed. I don't know. It's a wonderful metafictional mechanism.
Let's go with yours. Cool. Okay, next.
Next. Knack asks, not K-N-A-C-K, N-A-C. Okay. Like N-E-C, but with an A.
Like Gun Knack.
Yeah, like Gun Knack. Knack. Like Xanax, that's right. Xanax.
North American Computer is what that stands for.
Yeah. North American Computer asks, what's the Stephen Colbert transition from the Colbert Report to Stephen Colbert in the Late Show of video games?
Sonic Team going from Sonic the Hedgehog to Knights.
Knights is good. I'm one day out.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with Stephen Colbert having become a regular old TV show host. He has range. Guy's range. Never spoken publicly about my respect for Stephen Colbert's level of range before.
Yeah, but there exclusive. It is.
I'm good there's with no this answer.
Sure. Connor asks, what is the Jerry Lewis miming typing on a typewriter in Who's Minding the Sore 1963 of video games? Let's go.
Okay.
Typing of the Dead.
I'm sorry, it's still Balan Wonderworld, but you guys...
Yeah. Balan's Balan Wonderworld. Yeah. Yeah, who is Balan
Wonderworld, David Cage...
It's Yuji Naka complaining about Balan Wonderworld.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's correct, yeah.
Next question. Catherine asks, what is the parentheses Taylor's version, close parentheses, of video games? Go.
Hideo Kojima's Fizz Int. Being developed now as his next generation. I could talk about this for an hour. It is. I have a huge amount of respect for the idea of Taylor's version, and I think that I listened to Taylor Swift's new album, the extended edition of it. It was bad, but you gotta do it because my job is to understand culture. And let me tell you, Hideo Kojima standing up at the end of a goddarn Sony press conference is going, oh yeah, you think Death Stranding 2 is cool? I got something even better, and it's going to be the best tactical espionage stealth action military game I ever made. That rules. He's like basically declares he's ripping off Metal Gear. It's 100%.
That he cited fashion as a component of it has just been rattling in my mind for like months.
It's gonna own so.
It's gonna be best. It's gonna be the best. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm gonna purchase the biggest bong possible from Bongs R Us down the street in my Grand Theft Auto neighborhood.
Sam Bone Stacks asks, what is the post-Avengers endgame collapse of the Marvel Cinematic Universe of video games? And I have an answer here. It's Sega saying we're going to merge with Bandai, and then like a week before doing that collapsing, and then the Saturn, and then the Dreamcast, and then no more Sega.
Could be it.
Mm. Could be. But I feel like there's not enough hubris in that, maybe, for me.
I don't even know if there was hubris in the Marvel thing. Like, they just fired all their guns, and then they're like, we're going to take a couple. It really seems like they intended to take a couple years off. Mm. And, you know, they hemorrhaged a little bit of money, but I think they didn't. And the stuff blows now.
Well, and it's also like, you know, they blew, like, Captain America, Iron Man, you know, all the Thor, all the things people have heard of, and then they're like, Shoe Boy, you know, like, and I don't know what the video game equivalent of that is.
Yeah, it's on the tip of my brain.
Yeah, there's definitely some, like, mining too far into the lore stuff.
Yeah.
That could work for this, and I can't.
I don't think there is a failure Sonic game, right? Like, I think they all
It could be Knuckles Sonic Chaotix. Adventure. Knuckles Chaotix is that.
I don't think
kind
enough people played Knuckles Chaotix.
It's a failure, right? Just by,
I think Adventure 2
being
on
the first. Adventure 2 is the bad one, yeah.
Adventure 2 is the one that I think gets the most.
Okay.
But also, it's worth pointing out, Avengers Endgame was a huge financial success, and it was an enormous crowd pleaser, and it answered a million billion questions, and it resolved a whole bunch of storylines. Like, so basically, it represents an exhaustion. So the failure, the vacuum currently at the heart of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I should be getting paid to talk about this. The failure at the heart of the vacuum that is the current Marvel Cinematic Universe is owed to exhaustion, not some sort of fumble, you know?
Yeah.
It's not a fumble. They exhausted it in a pleasant way, a way that pleased the fans.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, I guess if they make any more Final Fantasy VIIs, that might be one.
Well, I got bad news.
They're on the hook for one more.
They've got to make one more. I mean, any more after that.
Yeah.
After the ones they've planned, if they do another one, then that might be it. But that's probably speculative.
Okay, next question. Last question.
Or we could just say it's the Xbox One, because the Xbox 360 was one of the best video game consoles of all time, with just so many absolute masterpieces in them.
Oh, yeah.
Or is it the Sega Saturn, where they didn't even bother having a Sonic?
Yeah.
The Genesis was so good, they didn't even have a Sonic on the Saturn? Come on.
Weird.
You look at some of the footage of Sonic Extreme running on PC, and it's just the most beautiful thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Unplayable, but yeah.
Yeah. No, there's no design to it. Last question. Reg asks, what is the Johnny Cash's hurt of video games?
So you got an old guy singing a newish song that transforms and owns it.
Yeah, back to his own.
Shigeru Miyamoto's Pac-Man... What's it called? God.
Pac-Man versus?
Pac-Man Versus, that's it, yeah.
Yeah, the Pac-Man Battles. Not Battle Royale, but it's just the Pac-Man Versus.
Yeah,
Royale.
It was a Game Boy Advances or something.
It was very, very, very well designed piece of video game.
It was his last video game, I think.
Yeah, he just smoked off into the sunset after that. Johnny Cash is hurt. Aww.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of good reduxes that have been done in a different person's style. There haven't
Ninja Gaiden?
Been.
Yes!
Yeah.
Yeah, Ninja Gaiden, yeah. Ninja Gaiden 2.
Good one.
Are there any games that are about an empire of dirt? Is there a game where a guy sits on a liar's chair?
Yeah, Simeon. Yeah.
Are there any games where they wear a crown of thorns because the original has a bad word?
I wear this crown of thorns.
And that is it.
I wear this crown of thorns because I do not have a hat.
Yeah, it really changed the meaning of that song. It's
My empire of dirt, how do you like that? Jay Cash really kind of changed up the lyrics.
Yeah, my umpire of dirt turned it into a baseball song.
Yeah, bases loaded.
That's a good question. Bases loaded. Johnny Cash is hurt of video games. Good question.
Yeah, I'd like to think about that one a little more.
That's a good one, yeah. Okay, ask the panel if they have any recommendations for our listeners.
Wonderful.
I had a couple things. One was that, have you all heard about this Steve Aoki pizza scam? It's not specifically him. So there's in Los Angeles and Oakland, this guy called Lawrence Vavra came up with this idea of having one kitchen that, it's not just a ghost kitchen, it's one kitchen that serves like six pizza brands out of it. And when one of them fails, because it sucks, they change the name and they serve the same thing and do it. And so it's like all six brands are in one pizza manufacturing spot, and they use different ingredients and stuff, but they're all made by the same crew, and they're all pretty bad. And it's really hard to identify them because they'll just be all over the place, and you'll be like, oh, this has some okay reviews and I haven't heard of it, so I'll give it a try. And that's what everybody's doing when they try these, because it's like, oh, I don't know this place, let's check it out. But it turns out it's all coming from the same defunct lane splitter kitchen that somebody bought. And Steve Aoki had his Aoki pizza or whatever in there for a while. We recently got fooled accidentally because we were hungry and driving, and purchased one from them on the go. It was undercooked. It was like a thin crust that was still soggy, not just soggy, like doughy. It was one of the, I think it maybe was the worst pizza I ever had. If you're interested in this phenomenon, because it is quite an interesting pizza scam, basically, that they got going, there's a Berkeley Side article. If you look for Berkeley Side and Steve Aoki, you should be able to find it. So that's one thing. Check that out, because it's an interesting way to essentially scam people while providing them the service that you promise, just by giving them something real bad, but you don't know which one you're going to get. Another thing I'm going to recommend, my dad for many years was talking about this sci-fi show that he liked that went off the air, and he called up the TV station and was like, "Wow, bring back that show." And they're like, "Oh, we've been getting all kinds of calls about it." Never came back. Recently, it's come to the streamers. And he started watching again. He was like, "I don't remember why I liked this so much." But I have started watching it, and it's fine. If you like C-level sci-fi nonsense, that's fine. Check out Space Rangers. It's better than Andromeda. Oh, it's not worse than it's not significantly worse than the first season of Babylon 5. So if you're desperate for some sci-fi sets and some somebody taking a rubber monster and jiggling it around for action, then check out Space Rangers. You can watch it on Freevee.
Oh, no.
Episode 6 is not on there, so you have to watch that one on YouTube. So that's what I got. That's what I have this week. Enjoy in heavy.
There's just like one guest on that episode that they just can't find to give them the checks or something. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Actually, I feel like somebody just wasn't paying attention.
Yeah.
I feel like nobody cares at all. And so it just didn't get on there. But yeah, there's 6 episodes total, so it's not a big time commitment. The idea was to make a sci-fi thing that focused more on action and less on all the things that people like about sci-fi. So there you go.
All right, I've got one. I was talking about the Fallout show last time. Have since finished it. Still enjoyed it. Liked it a lot. Like many people, at least according to Steam, I was like, I want to play some Fallout now. The one that I actually like playing is New Vegas.
That's right.
And
which you need a PhD to
mod. Take some doing.
You don't need a PhD. That's where I'm going with this. You do need time and you need time and patience though. Yeah. If, like me, you want to play New Vegas, you need to Google Viva New Vegas, which mm-hmm. is a set of mods. It is a website that is meticulously detailed in its instructions on how to set everything up. It is a very elaborate web of memory extenders and the ability to use new scripting languages and stuff that, like, opens the doors to new mods and things like that. And it's... I'm not going to lie. It takes about 2 hours. And
yeah, it takes a little while.
I have 112 mods on this game running right now. But
yeah,
the results are that this game is just running perfectly, like better than it ever did. You know, it's all of the known bugs are fixed. It's just unlocked frame rate and everything.
I squealed through it.
Yeah, you did it too. Okay.
Yeah.
You also did Viva New Vegas specifically?
Yeah, Viva New Vegas .com or whatever it is. Yeah.
Yeah. So you know the setup takes a long time, but if you just followed the instructions.
It's my joke about needing a PhD. Yeah. I gotta go to a website.
But it is if you want to play the game, again, it is I for me it was very much worth the 2 hours because I'm having a blast playing it every night now. So that is my recommendation. If you want, I mean, I guess my recommendation is New Vegas in general, but I wouldn't play it any other way than working 2 hours to set it up correctly.
It is not worth it to not do that.
Yeah,
it is not worth it to try to play the game without strapping all those mods in there.
It will just crash on you constantly.
Yeah, and it's unplayable. It's unplayable. And once you see what all those mods, I mean, if you need any further convincing, there are plenty of YouTube videos and tutorials that can show you what the game looks like with all the mods, and you're gonna want it because it's pretty delicious. Can I just say it's pretty shameful that you can't just buy that game and play it?
If only all of the rights to the developer and the IP were under one house these days, right? You'd think that might solve the problem.
They've got to have an announcement this summer, right? Like,
yeah,
play it on buy the 360 game and play it on my Series X.
I booted that. It runs at stable frame rate, but it's at 720p.
If you're like, I'd rather play trash than spend 2 hours, yeah, sure. It ran like trash back then, man. Like, I played through it on the 360 because that was the only option really at the time. It ran really poorly.
Yeah.
Well, Fallout
3, if you play Fallout 3 on your Xbox Series X, it has 4K resolution and frame rate boost up to 60 FPS.
Yeah.
So you can play Fallout 3. But New Vegas is... I don't hesitate to call it the good one, but it's kind
I'll
of
call
a
it the good one.
I'll call it that one. Yeah. I'll call it.
I just I bristle when a film people call Godfather Part Two the good one, which is insane because they're like recommending not watching the first one. You know what? Fallout New Vegas is not directly. It's not Fallout 3 is not required.
It is the raw danger of the series, you know, it's like, okay, you get it all here. And if you really want more, you can play slightly inferior ones.
Yeah, it's a good game. And also, I've been watching that show and I've got to say my problem with most streaming service stuff I've watched, I think after watching that Ripley show and now watching Fallout, we might just have finally transcended the era wherein streaming service TV shows look real bad, right?
Yeah,
they look real. Shows look real bad. But that Ripley show looks incredible. And this Fallout show looks really good. It just looks good.
Man, I was watching it while I was traveling and just on a laptop, and it looked good. But man, when I got home to my HDR TV, it's like, oh, this is an HDR show.
Yeah, it looks phenomenal. So it turns out you need not have any acquaintance whatsoever with the Fallout lore or whatever. But also, there's a guy like me who's played all those games, and I feel like it just does a better job of setting stuff up world builderly wise than some of the core games do. It turns out being a video game is kind of like, lore is kind of like carrying around a boulder of wet spaghetti, right? It's like, it's kind of hard for them to keep the lore meaningful, to keep the world building meaningful. But it's like the concept of vaults in Fallout is really novel, right? Mm-hmm. And it's something that kind of blossoms in its cleverness as you play the games. But they just pitch it very, very they essentialize it very, very nicely in the show to make you think of, I don't want to spoil anything for anybody who hasn't watched it, but you get into the origins of the vaults in a neat way. And I think that's fun.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm only 5 episodes in, so what do I know? In sitting down and having to write a story where they make this famously open-ended, choices-heavy video game into a linear story, they had to make their own decisions, which makes kind of the writers and producers sort of players in a way, right? So it ends up just feeling like a playful adaptation of a game. And it's just a very excellent counterpoint to something that is the exact opposite of playful, the Last of Us show.
Yeah.
And last night I went to the pictures last night, and there was a preview for that Borderlands movie. And if and that ain't just the exact opposite of a thing, like that Borderlands movie looks like such an out of left field, like it's going to get crushed between the Fallout TV show and the literal Mad Max movie coming out like a week later, right? It's going to get crushed between two boots just kind of parallel, just kind of smashing against each other. That Borderlands movie is like, oh, you can, the Fallout show is like, you can do different stuff with post-apocalypse. It's there is no hunger or thirst for Mad Maxisms in it as you watch it, because they got their own stuff. They got the vault lore. They've got cowboys. They've got knights and squires. World building is good.
That actually reminds me, another thing that I might recommend is if you enjoyed the movie Waterworld to any extent,
Double W,
the Ulysses cut, which is the version that takes all of the extra footage that they used in the TV and cable adaptations of it when they were trying to censor some stuff out, and so to pad it they used other existing footage, and so someone cut together all of that stuff into a 3-hour version of Waterworld, and then the studio for the Arrow Blu-ray release actually went back and got the original footage and put it in so that it's like, you know, mostly at least 1080p quality of stuff. I just watched it. It's pretty neat, actually.
I like that movie in general.
It was a surprise. I think the thing that was most surprising to me is that despite having seen that movie many times, I didn't actually notice a lot of the new stuff, because a lot of the new stuff is like more shots of boats, more people walking around, and you can see their costumes. It's all stuff that kind of feels like it should be there. It also doesn't slow the pace down. The pace slows down at the end of the movie like it always did.
Dry land. When you you mean the part where you sip and savor the sweet flavor of dry land?
That's right. Yeah, that part. Anyway, it's kind of fun to see that. So I recommend that. That's on the Arrow 4K release that came out. The second disc has the Ulysses cut. It's 3 hours. If you can stomach 3 hours of Wadi World, if you watch it a couple times before, you can do it again. That's my recommendation.
Yeah.
I have a recommendation. I'm learning Japanese, which is my recommendation. LJN. Learn Japanese now. Yeah. There we go.
Very good.
We got there. Good work. So I'm learning Japanese, and I'm getting to the point where I want to sort of start reading and like trying to, you know, parse through written word and stuff. So because I contain within me the spirit of an 80-year-old man, I immediately, well, what's the 1950s manga thing I should definitely read, which led me to Tetsujin Nijihachigo. Tetsujin 28 Go, which was released as Gigantor here. I'm going somewhere with this. Tetsujin Nijihachigo was written by Mitsuteru Yokoyama, who's like one of the original like three. Tezuka is the other. I can't remember who the third is. But, you know, kind of like tentpole manga artists of the 1950s and 1960s. Flash forward to the 1990s, there's an OVA series by Yasuhiro Imagawa called Giant Robo, The Day the Earth Stood Still, which is my recommendation. It's a it's from 1992. It took them like 6 years to make it. It's an OVA, so they came out on like VHS and Laserdisc. Hideaki Anno did some of the animation for, I think, just the first episode. Basically, it's period anime. It's like a future. Yeah, Brandon Sheffield is holding up Laserdiscs of the, yeah. It's so sick.
It's got the whole series on Laserdisc there.
So it's like, if you like Evangelion, if you like the sort of like cataclysmic, massive scope, kind of like terrifying atrocity stuff like Gunbuster, anything Gainax has done. If you could imagine that done with like little squishy Astro Boy guys, but played completely straight with just tremendous orchestral music, it kicked off a kind of a period anime thing that is a large part of the reason Sakura Taisen happened, that Sega made Sakura Taisen. There's a lot of continuity there. Yeah. So watch Giant Robo, The Day the Earth Stood Still. It's probably on Crunchyroll or something where you can find it. Discotech has a Blu-ray out. It's amazing. It's just the most beautifully animated thing I've ever seen. It is mature and like assured, and like it just has like an aura about it. It's just really, really good. So yeah. Also learn Japanese.
I was gonna say, I feel like it's was one of the influences on Robot Alchemic Drive and what was the other one? Dandy, whatever.
Remote Control Dandy.
Remote Control Dandy. It feels like I feel like those were the idea of like being next to your robot or on top of your robot. I feel like there's something in there. The end. What were you gonna say?
I saw a copy of Robot Alchemic Drive at a Dick's Sporting Goods in Pelham, Alabama.
Nice.
Did you buy it? Glass case, and I did not buy it. And every day I kick myself.
It was in a glass case at Dick's Sporting Goods?
There's a glass case where they had some PlayStation 2 games at Dick's Sporting Goods. Yeah.
Wow. Sometimes you need something to play in your truck on your way to your camping site, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's all we did.
And a game that's already about doing two things at the same time, I guess, is worth playing while driving.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
A couple more things. Yeah.
So what I was going to say was I'm scrolling down. I opened up Twitter. I like to open up Twitter toward the end of these podcast recording sessions because, this just being on this podcast, it kind of feels like being on social media for me. It's the closest I get, right? So I see a tweet by IGN from 15 minutes ago. Okay. And I don't want to make fun of IGN, but I love this. I want to read the tweet out loud. We took a deeper dive into IGN metrics to find out why Squirrel with a Gun, due out later this year for PC, PlayStation, and Xbox, looks poised to be this year's untitled Goose Game-style breakout hit. Now, as a guy who does a lot of work, a lot of research, and a lot of science, and a lot of analysis in his own everyday, I've got to say, I don't know if I necessarily need the password to y'all's metrics database to understand that Squirrel with a Gun looks poised to be this year's untitled Goose Game style breakout hit, because it's about an animal doing mischief, right?
Yeah.
Pretty easy for me. I didn't have to put on my Sherlock Holmes hat or anything. And I might as well point out that I know Sherlock Holmes didn't wear that hat in the stories. He didn't wear a hat. I don't have to put that on. to solve that mystery. But y'all go on, have fun playing with your metrics. and now, Control W, the tab is closed.
The tab is closed.
It was my social media visitation of the week.
The X Power Hour. Alex Jaffe has some recommendations he asked me to read as well.
Uh-oh.
If you enjoyed this or any other episode of Insert Credit, please rate and review our show wherever and however you can. Just on the street to strangers. You can also just tell them about it. You can also support the show on patreon.com/insertcredit. Tim Rogers receives no support from this Patreon. If you'd like to sponsor an episode with an advertisement or personal message, contact us at show@insertcredit.com. You can also join our community at forums.insertcredit.com or find videos of these episodes with curated visuals to enhance your Insert Credit experience on youtube.com/insertcreditshow. This episode is guest edited by Mox Bickle with original music by Kurt Feldman. I'm Krista Lee.
I'm Brandon Sheffield.
I'm Frank Spaldi.
I'm Tim Rogers.
And the creator of Bonk may or may not be a racist. We can't possibly know.
Wait, stop, hold on. I've just received an email from a former Hudson employee, a former employee of the Red Corporation.
The Red Corporation.
Mm-hmm. Uh-oh.
Can you tell him to bring Tingai Macchio back, please?